Chapter Parak 18. We are in the middle of the unit on Emunah. Just a scheduling note: I'm traveling this Thursday, Yemirtzah Hashem, a week from yesterday. So there'll be 2 weeks where I will not be here. But Yemirtzah Hashem, the week after that, I will be. So if you're in the WhatsApp group, we'll keep you updated. But I will be traveling, so there's a little bit of a break. So we have to get in enough chizuk today that will hopefully last us for the next 2 weeks. Okay, so we had began 2 weeks ago in the beginning of this unit on Emunah. And this chapter is, again, I think, different in that sense, contributing in a new way to anything we've seen previously. But the common denominator is he's taking Emunah from a very, I would say, practical slash muster perspective. Again, I'm reiterating, because I think it's relevant for this chapter as well, something I've mentioned in the previous 2 weeks, which is that this is not like a philosophy class. This is not Emunah in the sense of what you would have expected if you went maybe to an Eish HaTorah seminar or took a philosophy class in college or anything like that. Not there's anything wrong with that necessarily, but that's not what we've been doing. So keeping in that, a chapter entitled Chinuch Le'emunah. So I would imagine, and again, I'm not saying it's misplaced at all, but there's a lot of discussion now in educational circles, I think across the board, not only in more yeshivish circles and more modern circles. I know certainly in the States, they're probably behind Israel, but there's been a lot of discussion about how we get more Emunah into the schools. And I think there's a fellow, I don't want to say his name, but I think he's maybe even currently or originally from Toronto, and he's been a major pioneer even with Torah Masorah and the Agudah of getting them to teach more Emunah. You can't take for granted even kids from the frumest families that they really know anything, let alone believe anything, if you don't ever teach it, etc., etc. So you hear a chapter called Chinuch Le'emunah, and out of context, you might expect it's going to be something like that. How do we teach the Yud Gimel Ikarim? You know, that kind of stuff. But that's not what he's doing, but he's doing something, and again, I think in a very brilliant and a very important way, just different than what we might have otherwise expected if we thought this was going to be philosophy, if you will. So he says as follows, with all that introduction in mind. Begashtenu levarer, as we approach this issue to try to understand, mahu chinuch le'emunah, how can we try to educate ourselves, you know, habituate ourselves to have stronger emunah? Yadrich osanu ha-Rambam. Now again, you'd say, okay, Rambam, who better as a philosopher? But he's not quoting Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, rather the Rambam in Perash HaMishnayis on a well-known Mishnah that we're all familiar with in the fourth parak of Perkei Avos. What does the Mishnah say in, according to the Girsa of the Rambam? Omer, the Tana says, three things will remove a person from the world. Hakina, Hataiva, V'ahavas HaKavod, Motzi Nasa Adam in HaOlam. And those are the things that will take a person out of the world. Right? That's the paraphrase of the actual Mishnah. Right? Jealousy, you know, unbridled lust, and pursuing kavod, running after honor. So that's the quote or paraphrase of the Mishnah. Now here comes the Rambam, commenting, editorializing. Why? V'hu kib eila hamidos, or even achat mehen, if you have all three of those bad midos, let alone even one, or even one, I should say. Here's the key point. Says the Rambam, yafsid emunas ha-Torah behechrech. You will necessarily lose your emunah. Now you see what the Rambam did? I mean, we're primed for it because Rav Volbi told us to pay attention. But this was like a great magician. It was a sleight of hand. It was an illusionist. Right? The Mishnah doesn't talk about emunah. The Mishnah says, if you have these three midos, it'll take you out of the world. When the Rambam paraphrases the Mishnah, he uses a sleight of hand. He doesn't mention the world. He says, if you have these three midos, you will lose your emunah. So says Rav Volbi, now that we've been primed to notice what just happened, what do you see the Rambam doing? Ki shalosh hamidos elu, motzius es ha'adam min ha'olam, that's the Mishnah, hainu, what did the Rambam interpret that to mean? Me'emunatenu. He substitutes emunah for olam. And what's the upshot? Again, it was worth coming today just for this one line. Ki olamo shel ha'adam zuhi emunato. Right? What is your world? You can think of it in very material ways, and there's obviously a certain truth to that. My world is I have this car and this house and the right. But in a very deep way, also for sure true is, in many ways a person's world is defined by their beliefs. Right? You go not just because that'll infect. I don't think what he means is just because it makes your decisions differently. Right? If you weren't a believing Jew, you might not have been up at 7 in the morning on a Friday. You might not be sitting in a class. Right? That's obvious. I think it's more than that. Right? That's also true, obviously true. But it's more than that. Everything that happens to you is filtered through a certain schema, right? You're looking at it through the lens of a... Right? Your world is completely defined by your belief, right? You see what's going on in the Middle East, right? You could look at it as a secular person, and you could have one opinion, really the Arabs are right. You could have another. You could also look at it and really the Jews are right. But it's a completely different way of looking at it than if you're a believing Jew. Mm-hmm. And you have Jewish history as part of your filter, a belief in ultimate geula, and where are we in the process, the arc of Jewish... Right? It's a completely different world. You're experiencing things differently based on your belief. Right? Something really good happens in life, hopefully. Right? It's a different experience if there's a Hodu Lashem Kitov in there. Nebuch, Rahman al-Tlam, you have challenges, tragedies, etc., etc. Right? How do you view your children? How do you look at your parents? Vertically, horizontally, all that stuff. That's your world. And even if the same people were in the world, but if you had different beliefs, it would be a different world. So says Rav Olbi, already, that's what the Rambam has already primed us for. That your world, in many ways, is your belief. Now, if that's the case, and here comes Rav Olbi to explicate what's going on, if that's the case, what that means is, we just started, it's okay. If that's the case, what it means is that when the Mishnah had said, if you have these three bad midos, you could ruin your world, we're now going to substitute, says the Rav Olbi, and say that evidently these three midos are destructively, negatively corresponding to three key emunas that shape our world. Okay, that's now we understand like the methodology. Again, all based on this, the rest of this is going to be Rav Olbi, but all Rav Olbi in this chapter is based on that chiddush of the Rambam. That the Rambam substituted the word emuna for olam. And evidently, says Rav Olbi, what that means, and I think it's a very deep and profound point, is that our world in many ways is shaped by our beliefs. All of our experiences, the way we interpret, the way we see everything, let alone decisions that we make, but even the things that we've already done or seen, but the way we perceive them, the way we view our experience in the world, it's all subconsciously even, that it's completely different worlds based on our beliefs. And therefore, evidently, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos is telling us these three things, Kina, Taiva, and Kavod, running after those or being, you know, in the grip of those somehow ruin such foundational beliefs that our whole world would be different without them. So now let's take one at a time. Hataiva l'cheftzi haguf menugedet l'hashrashas ha'adam b'olam haruchani asher sham mikomo. First thing he says is when it says taiva, obviously we know this from Rav Olbi previous weeks, and we know this from our intuitions and a wealth of Jewish sources. Right? We're not, at least in this world, intended to be purely ascetic. But there's a sliding scale. And clearly, there's a battle, if you will, to try to find the right proportion and the right ratio between the physical needs of our body and the spiritual needs of our neshama. So says Rav Olbi, again, he doesn't say any of that, but I think it's obvious that that's in the back of his mind. A person who has too much taiva, who's running after the physical pleasures of the world, basically, that is in contrast, that is in conflict, menugedet, it's in conflict with trying to implant more of a focus on spirituality. And after all, he says, quoting now the Chovos HaLevavos, what is the kavanah of the Torah? L'hamshil ha-seichel b'chol taivas ha-nefesh u'lagbiru aleihem. Right? Again, this is also a one-liner, but it's... If a person could really internalize this one-liner, in a positive way, of course, would impact a person's life. And we see that from the examples of people who have failed at that. That is to say, says the Chovos HaLevavos, the goal of this world is that a person's seichel, a person's more intellectual, spiritual dimension, not that it, you know, vanquishes, eliminates their physical needs, that doesn't exist as long as you're alive, but rather, who's in control? I think we mentioned the famous, you know, mashal, you know, when you have the rider on the elephant, right? You know, the rider thinks he's the rider, you know, in charge. You know, I pull this way, I pull that way. Until the elephant decides, I'm going that way. And all of a sudden, quickly, the rider remembers, I'm not really in control. Right? So, the goal of, right, we all have that elephant inside of us. Right? We have a raging bull, right? And the question is, are we going to be really in charge and holding the reins? Or is the bull going to be dragging us wherever it wants to go? So, says Rav Olbi, the key to life, as much as possible, is that your seichel, the higher parts of you, should be the Moshel, right? And again, even if it wouldn't be late on a Friday, I still don't think this would be the right place to belabor the point. But just to make the obvious example, think of all the people, unfortunately, Nebuch even in our world, but certainly in the broader secular world, who have ruined their lives because they had a certain taiva And it could be mammon, kavod, arayos. And for that momentary pleasure, they couldn't control themselves. They'll never get back what they thought they had. Forget what they thought they were going to gain. They ruined their whole lives. We think of politicians, business. There's so many examples. Rabbanim, I mean, nevuch. Right? Because the seichel wasn't in control. If you ask the person, does this make sense? Risk reward. Right? You don't have to go to like Harvard Business School to figure that one out. You know, you need complex algorithms. Right? The risk reward, even I could figure out, is not worth it. But when the seichel is not in control, so that's number one. He says, what's more in control? What's driving what? The guf or the neshama? Who's driving what? There's also a very powerful line. Emunas haTorah hi emuna b'mitziyuta shel ruchaniyut. You know, if I had to say, what, how do you boil down the Torah to one sentence? Interesting question. I don't know. I would never even have thought of it even. So to some extent, he says, I'm not saying he's saying it exactly that way. I just said it. But if you had to boil it down, he says, belief in the Torah is also preforced by definition a belief in the reality. There is this other thing. This is called the spiritual dimension, right? If you're totally secular, you don't believe in it at all. Right, there's a material world. There's a world that we can measure, and if it doesn't, we can't measure it. We can't touch it. We can't feel it. We can't predict it. So we don't necessarily believe in it. Right. So the Torah, aside from everything else, right? You wouldn't say what is Torah? Lulav. Lulav. You know, I'm not belittling Chas V'Shalom as a lulav, but it's one of 613 mitzvos. But a broader principle that's going to is overarching. So there will be a minimum. It's the belief in the reality of this, and the more a person is. Megusham, the more physical a person is, more than they had to be, the more a person is being controlled by their taivas, not controlling them. So it's just, by definition, you only have 100, you know, there's only 100% of you. In some ways, it's a zero-sum game. The more spiritual you are, the less physical you are. The more physical you are. Again, everyone's both. But it's a sliding scale. So to the extent that the belief in spirituality, that reality, and being in touch with our spiritual selves is a cornerstone of our belief, says Rav Volbi, point number one of the mission is, the more a person is running after taiva and that it's controlling him, willy-nilly, by definition, the less his world of emuna is really kayam. Okay, next. And he adds, I'm sorry, one last thing. This paragraph is so good. I keep on wanting to get to the next one to save time, but I don't want to cheat you out of such a... So at the end of the paragraph, he makes the point that, and something that we've seen previously, and again, we also know this, but he has such a beautiful way of putting things. He says, that reality of spirituality, that other dimension, in the current world, the way it's constructed, we can't see it, we can't prove it. So it's an emunah, it's a belief. It says there will come a time, you know, nebuch for people who pass away after 120, and then hopefully one day with the geula, shlema, so there will come a time where it'll be evident. Until at that point, it will be a yediyah. But he says in the last line, kol od lo higiyah lahasagazu, but until a person can get to that point, and as long as we're alive as a human being, even the biggest maimon has some doubt, because he can't see it 100%. That's okay, that's the point. Because we can't know it the way we know other things at this point in history, so every person, again, some people are doing better than others, but everyone has to be working on themselves to believe in this thing that they can't see, smell, or touch. The more, that's hard enough. The more a person is megusham and suffused and, you know, living for lunch, not eating lunch to live, or, you know, as the saying sometimes goes, right? You're living for the next taiva. That's what's controlling you, making your decisions. You know, the elephant's driving things. You're simply, you know, going to be, it's not possible to sustain them both if you're, you know, at that level. And you're going to be, by definition, losing the spiritual. Number one. Number two. This one's shorter, but also very, very powerful. What was the second thing in the mission? Not only taiva? Actually, he goes out of order. I didn't realize, but still. What was the next thing he wants to talk about? Kina. How is kina, a person who's a jealous person, how does that shter ruin emunah? How's that menugad to the emunah, as he put it? Hamashtit et shifat chayav al kinat ish meireyu. Right? Again, very powerful language. A person who mashtit means someone who bases his life. Right? Everyone sees the next guy's car, the next guy's job, and the next guy's child. I hope, but sometimes nebuch, even the next guy's wife. It shouldn't happen, I hope, but it probably sometimes does. Right? And gets jealous. A little. But he's saying, okay, that's not good. He's not defending it. But you're not a bum just if every now and then you're human. But hamashtit, you make as the foundation, right? They're jealous people, right? Not that person who happens to have been jealous. But it's part of their midah. They're jealous people. We know people like this. They're always talking about everybody else and what the neighbor got and what the neighbor's doing for Pesach. And right, there's certain people that make decisions. Hamashtit et shifat chayav al kinas ish merayu sotem b'fanav ederach lahakar hashkacha. And this, I think, is the most easy to understand. Right, and other people way before Ravolvi had made this point. Right? A person who truly believes in hashkacha pratis, jealousy is completely illogical. As he points out, if you believe hamamim b'muna shleima kiboru also kol tzarcho, v'chein malchus nogas b'chavrata, as the Gemara in Brachos, you know, says as a parable, enu yachol yot parutz b'kina. Right? Hashem gave me what I need. I might want more. Maybe I can daven for more. Maybe I can get more. But what does that have to do with what Hashem gave the other person? It's irrelevant. Hashem didn't give it to him by taking it out of my pocket. It's irrelevant. Right? If I truly believe in Hashkacha, that everyone gets what Hashem thinks is best for them, so then jealousy makes no sense. Now, you could be, it's a separate discussion, okay, I'm not jealous of him, but I'm not happy with what Hashem gave me. Okay, that's also a chisaron and emunah, for sure. But that's already a much lower level problem, right? And then you have to work on that, okay? With a lot of challenges and a lot of struggles we all have in belief. But the idea of looking at other people's car and other people's house, again, Baruch Hashem, a lot of that gets reduced by simply making aliyah. I was just talking with somebody recently who said, you know, talking about how, you know, not as easy to maybe make a living in Israel as some people before they make aliyah think. And the person was telling me, he says, I pretty much, it's a wash in terms of what I do now, what I do then. He says, but it's still much better now. Why? Because there's no more keeping up with the Joneses here. I feel none of the pressure I felt before I made aliyah. Again, I'm not saying it's one person's experience. I'm not saying everyone has the same experience. Some people might be in a real gap financially, then they're really struggling. Some people might be doing better financially here. And some people might feel that they're running after the Joneses here. But I think it's very, very rare. So, I mean, it's something that I intuited before I made aliyah, and certainly in my 13 years here, I, at least personally, I don't feel it at all. I don't see most people complaining about it. Some people have more than others. I mean, if you have eyes, you know that. But still, there's no sense the way you have, you know, again, outside of Israel also, not every community is equally. Some communities are really bad at this. And some communities are only a little bad at this. But I think overall, you cannot compare outside of Israel to Israel for this. That's my personal experience. But be that as it may, it doesn't matter where you live, the emuna in Hashkacha, if one really would have it, there's no place for jealousy, which means in the reverse, using the Mishnah, a person who's always jealous of other people, it means that his world is not the world of Emunah because he doesn't have the proper Hashkacha. And last but not least, he says here, third next big paragraph, and this will be the main thing we'll finish with. Hameivinu makir ki olam hazehu olam ha'avoda v'chigmul ha'tzadikim shemur lehem le'olam haba dafka nizhar ma'od milordof achar kavod. Why do people run after kavod? Right? Kavod of all things, you can't put kavod in a bank. Right, kavod will not pay for the mortgage, you know, on your vacation house in the Hamptons. Right? Even if a person wanted those things, kavod's not that. Kavod's not going to, you know, give you enough money to pay the caterer for your daughter's wedding. Like, what does kavod give you? Right. So, kavod is an extreme example, says Ravolbi, of someone who evidently feels like anything that's in this world, that must be the be-all and end-all. That the way you're viewed in this world, that's what matters. But that is completely antithetical, he said, to the belief that that's actually not the role of this world. This is the world, you know, the Erev Shabbos world, as the Chazal say in other contexts. But the world where we get to reap the reward is the next world. So he says, Atu milsa zuchusa asharas harash. This is an unbelievable statement of the Rosh. He quotes two Rishonim, which are mind-boggling, in their books of Musar. The Rosh in the book Or Chaim says, V'tira shelo tekabal schar b'olam hazeh. A person should be scared. I don't want anything good in this world. And again, I can't live on that level, to be honest with you. I could use a little bit in this world. I'm just letting Hashem know. I'm not on the level of the Rush. And if you're not, you know, join me. We can all... But, okay, so it's an extreme statement. But it's telling. It's telling. Again, we've probably all heard at various points these mashalim. And so therefore, maybe they are dull to us. But again, I think if we think about them for a second, they're not simplistic. I think they're actually very profound. You know, if your boss, maybe now is not, maybe this is too close to home, I hope, but if someone were to say to you right now, instead of giving you, I don't know, whatever you make for your salary this month, I'm going to give it to you in whatever cryptos on FTX. You know, you can have, it's worthless now. There's nothing there anymore. I'm going to give you 80% of that company. It's 80% of zero. 80% of bankruptcy, 80% of fraud, 80% who knows what, right? Or, again, but that's not the mashal that the Rebbeim gave when we were in Yeshiva, right? Like the Chavetz Chaim, you know, the mashal, I'm going to give you, you know, some fat that's going to dissolve or something, right? You're on some island and, right, they don't have it, right? So there, you know, they have no food, but there's diamonds aplenty, right? In different worlds, different things have currency, right? Right. So if you think that the thing that's going to have value is the thing that's only in this world, it's not, I mean, it's the most transitory thing, least tangible in this world, why would I want that? Don't pay, Hashem, you can pay me. You can give me, you know, millions and millions of bananas, or you can give me a diamond. So of course you would say, I don't want the bananas, I want the diamond. So that's what the rush is saying. It's just an extreme way of saying, but the rush is saying, don't pay me in this world. This world is bananas. This world is worthless crypto. I want the thing that's really going to be something that's in the Olam Haba. How far you go? This is a mind-boggling, there's a not such a well-known essay by Rabbeinu Yonah called Sefer Ayira. So I'll just paraphrase this outside. He says, listen, people are talking in shul. Apparently it happened even in the time of Rabbeinu Yonah.
What?
Yeah, Pella, right? Simple. People talking in shul. He says, so what should you do? And then he has a line here. This is worth reading inside. I'm not sure what I don't know what to do with this. He says, it's bad enough to talk in shul. Af kibah shas kriyas haTorah. They even talk during kriyas haTorah. It sounds like as if maybe that's not as bad. I'm not sure. But af kriyas haTorah. Anyway, be that as it may. So if you're sitting near these people, so what should you do? Pretend that you're davening. And even if you're just, you know, it's chazar, pretend you can, you know, well, now why would you pretend that you're davening? Presumably so they won't start talking to you. Now what would a normal person do who never read this? If they're on a high madriga, again, a normal person, if they start talking to you, is going to respond, because it's uncomfortable not to. No one wants to feel like a frummy. Right? But if you keep good, if you want to get past that, and a person would try to talk to you in the middle of davening, you say, so, you know, you either with your hand, you'd notion, you know, I'm sorry, I can't talk, or you'd even say, sorry, you know, I don't talk to him, davening, you know, we can talk afterwards. Like, so says Rabbeinu Yonah, don't do that. Al yitpa'er lomar eini medaber. Because by saying that, or even with a hand motion, in essence, you're showing off. Al yitpa'er, don't say, ki kola mitpa'er, ki mato nota al-tzchar, because they've already lost your reward. Already giving yourself that leg up on the other person, look, I'm firmer, I don't talk during Chazaras HaShatz. That's already shtick covered. You just lost a million shares in Olam Haba. For what? So that in that one moment, people were, ooh, chashav, this guy doesn't talk. So he says, pretend you're davening so they won't talk to you, and then you don't have to pretend that you're from, and that's why you're not talking to them. Again, these are extreme sources, I would say. But they're illustrating the point he's trying to make. And this is he concludes it with the last line. E lezot. If this is going to go so far, kam harodef achar hakavod, rachok mehabihirut be'emunas olam haba. If a person truly believed in olam haba, if you truly believe that you had this reward waiting for you that was far more valuable than any of the fraudulent, worthless stock that they're offering you now, you certainly wouldn't, again, you need certain things to live. He's not an ascetic here. He's not telling you to live in a cave. You need certain things to live. But you wouldn't be running after those things, and you certainly wouldn't be running after something which is as untangible and as worthless as kavod. So to sum it up, and we won't read the next page, we'll just finish with this last paragraph. He sums it up in a very beautiful way. So what do we see from this Rambam? Olamo shel Adam hamitsuyan. In essence, we said, right, a person's, again, this was the headline of the whole piece, I think, which I think was very powerful, it was his diuk in the Rambam, that a person's world is his beliefs. Right? There's all sorts of ways you could have described your world. I don't know what we would have said on our own, but I think a really profound way of looking at it, as he indicated from the Rambam, is in many ways our world is shaped by our beliefs, right? Our experiences, two people having the exact same experiences, living in the same neighborhood, going to the same jobs, same schools, different beliefs would have different worlds. They're living in different worlds because our beliefs color everything. So says the Rambam, Ravobi, in essence, based on this Rambam that we've now explicated, that a person's world is demarcated, hametsuyan, number one, by hashkacha brura b'shal ruchnis, hasaga, excuse me, the awareness that there's a spiritual dimension, right? That's a spiritual belief. And we don't live in a world yet where there's the idea of that, so we need an emunah. Number two, hakard hashkacha, a belief that what Hashem is giving me is what I need, there's no reason to be jealous. And number three, b'shifa l'chayei olam, the awareness that there's a more valuable, ultimate reward waiting for us. Ze emunata, that is the belief that makes up our world. And therefore, as a result, these big three, hataiva, the kina, and the kavod, they're motziim adam from what? From that world. If you have any one of those, let alone all three, you can't live in a world constructed by the belief in Ruchnius, Hashkacha in Olam Haba. And therefore, getting back to the title, with this we conclude, the title of the essay, last line, Hachinuch le'emuna hu efo. And therefore, if a person wants to train oneself, let alone your children and others, going to train yourself for emuna, what we mean by that in this context is, Sima slave timidit, lebal nashtit, et chayenu ala taiva kina lekavod. And again, and I'm being medayik again, second time I'm doing this, because I think it's such a powerful word, nashtit. He's acknowledging that everyone's going to have some bit of all these three. Right? The goal is to have less, but we're all going to have, but eino dom, a person who has some degree of any of these, and a person who's nashtit et chayav, who makes the foundation of his life, how much money he makes, or how much money his neighbor's making and he's not making, or how good the neighbor's kids are doing versus his kids are doing, and all the jealousy things that people have, and running after COVID. If a person has a foundation of any of those things, let alone all three, you don't have the proper emunah. Therefore, if a person in an affirmative way wants to be mechanic himself, train himself in emunah, these three things are the ones to work on. Agun Chayresh.